the Ghost Goal Podcast.
Arsenal leapfrogged City and Liverpool to go top as both sides played out to a 1-1 stalemate on Saturday, while Aston Villa jumped ahead of Tottenham and into the top four with a 2-1 win away from home on Sunday. Everton suffered a second sucker punch in less than a week after their points deduction when Alejandro Garnacho pulled off what's surely to be a goal of the season contender 3 minutes into Manchester United's 3-0 win at Goodison Park. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Call Podcast, episode 433. How you doing, Javier? Pretty good weekend for you?
Yeah, no, your prediction came true, Alex, right? You said, hey, you know, wouldn't it be a great result if you guys get, if they get a 1-1 draw and you guys win and you go top of the table? It's exactly what happened, Alex. Thank you for speaking that into existence in the last pod. You just got to talk like that more often, Alex. Please just say words like that and just speak them into existence.
Well, unfortunately, it proves that you really haven't grown at all from last season, Javier, because remember, I was saying that to bait you, to get you to admit that, you know, you do care how long you spend at the top of the table and not whether you finish at the top of the table.
I don't care about the top of the table, but we got to start at that 1-1 draw, Alex, because that was, you know, 7:30 in the morning. You thought there was going to be 4-2. I said there wasn't going to be a lot of goals. I think you realized later on that the 7:30 early kickoff coming off an international break, you know, really meant that these players were going to, it wasn't going to be a lot of chances. They were going to be missing a lot of those chances if they had them. And there was going to be a lot of tired legs, especially in the second half. So it wasn't the most exciting game. I would say that both teams kind of had their spells of domination. I thought City were, you know, the better team on the day, obviously, but I think Liverpool did well to come out with a point, and I don't think it's undeserving. I mean, I thought it was pretty fair result, actually. I thought that it was kind of a, you know, Van Dijk really shut Erling Haaland down. I didn't think Haaland had, you know, too much of an impact. He was, you know, a little bit.
I don't know if you could you say he shut him down when he scored? I don't know. That kind of disqualifies the phrase for me.
I'm saying shut him down. Well. Yeah, other than that, he did well. Yeah, he didn't shut him down because Haaland scored. You're right. So it's hard to say that he shut him down. But, I mean, he kept him to, you know, just that. You know, there wasn't really too many insane saves that Alisson needed to make. Now, Alisson, I thought, had a horror show. I thought he was the kind of the talking point of this game because, you know, he made the mistake for the goal, and then he had a couple of other, you know, really bad mistakes that almost cost the team, and he just kind of looked shaky, I think. So, but then again, when you play out the back, errors like that always happen, and, you know, we see it happen to every team. Arsenal, you know, Chelsea, Liverpool, it happens to the best teams that like to play out the back, so.
Yeah, there's an inherent risk that comes with playing that way against a top team.
I think I was about to say, Ederson is just so good with his feet that he almost actually never makes a mistake. But even he occasionally has gaffes, and we've seen it. You know, it's why he doesn't, you know, start for Brazil regularly when he used to. And I mean, and Alisson's amazing, probably, you know, one of the best goalies in the world. But I do think Alisson's declined just a little bit. From that level that he was, you know, the clear and away best goalie in the Premier League. I don't know if he's that anymore. I don't think he is. I think, you know, he's still very, very good. Top, you know, four goalie in the league. But I think his time is slightly declining, or his form is declining, and Liverpool are showing it. Because I thought Liverpool were very good defensively outside of, you know, their goalie. I thought Trent did pretty well. I know Doku got by him a lot, but I thought that Liverpool as a team worked well to contain that threat that City constantly went at the entire game over and over and over again, just Doku, going at Trent. And the first few times, yeah, he got past Trent, you know, he got to the byline and was able to cut it back, but after that, Trent like kind of adapted, and I thought he did pretty well. So, you know, I get credit to Liverpool because I thought they worked really hard. They had, you know, I thought Mohamed Salah was a little bit underwhelming. As a, you know, he usually is dominant in these types. I know he, again, he got an assist, so it's hard to say that he, you know, he didn't do anything, but he did have an effect on the game. But he, you know, was fairly contained by City, you know, and he was on tremendous form. So I think Darwin Nunez is the one who could have made more of an impact, should have made more of an impact, but maybe, you know, was a little bit tired from the international break. So you can give him a little bit of a pass.
Did we ever figure out what that whole argument between Pep and Darwin Nunez was at the end of the game? Like, Klopp had to separate Nunez and take him away.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. I don't.
I never looked into it further. I probably should have, but yeah, that seemed like a real, real weird one. And a lot of the explanation for that, like joking explanation for that, you saw on social media was along the lines of, you know, Darwin Nunez trying to disguise another disaster class by, you know, getting into it with Pep at the end of the game to distract people. Which is perfectly possible, but much more likely that was a joke. Yeah, I mean, just to briefly reiterate what you're saying about Trent Alexander-Arnold, that matchup with Doku was the one that I highlighted in our preview last week. And like you said, even though he lost that battle individually pretty frequently, City like did get a lot of joy from that battle. I think you're right to point out that Trent and the Liverpool team as a whole did well to, you know, support Trent individually, like by, you know, limiting those opportunities and bringing a second man over to help Alexander-Arnold out. Like, you're never gonna win like 100% of those duels with a player as talented as Doku, but if you can try and limit it as much as possible and give Trent the license to get forward. You saw at the end of the game, he got forward and got his goal to equalize. He picked his moment perfectly and stood up and did it when it mattered most. So overall, really good result for Liverpool. I'm sure City are probably like kicking themselves that they didn't close the door on Liverpool sooner, because they had the lead for 50 to 60 minutes of that game before the eventual equalizer was scored. And yeah, they weren't like banging down the door with chances, but they had a few other good ones that you would have thought Manchester City are used
Foden
to going up 2-0 or 3-0.
Alisson had to make, you know, a really nice save on Foden. Foden had that one shot at the end of the first half that like almost crept into the corner. I think Julian Alvarez missed a couple, not sitters, but pretty good chances. You know, he was in a couple of good positions and just blasted them over. Again, I think a lot of this was international break. You know, these players played two games, were traveling this whole time. Coming back and playing that first game, it's really hard. It's just, you rarely see any type of, like, goal glut. And there's almost always, like, a big game for some reason as that first game coming off the international break. But
It's the East Asian markets that the reason why those 7:30 a.m. games here in the States are big ones usually is because it's, you know, 7 or 8 p.m. in, you know, East Asia at that time on a Saturday night. And it makes sense to me. But it does feel weird when you think of what we're used to seeing in this game in terms of like the intensity and the energy levels relative. Like you said, this game was, you know, a little uneventful compared to past Manchester City Liverpool games. But it was still worth getting up and watching to me. I enjoyed it a lot. And I think you're right that like 1-1 in the end was a fair result. That draw, which started with those two teams being first and second, eventually led to later on Saturday, Arsenal leapfrogging both teams and going into first. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this one because, you know, there were chances for both teams, but give us your quick thoughts on that 1-0 win with Kai Havertz scoring the winner right at the end to put you guys back up into first place.
I kind of do want to spend a little time on this, Alex, purely because
there's so many better games to
talk
about.
I know, but it's not the game, though. It's the significance of this win. I think, number one, another clean sheet on the road gets massive. Without David Raya, we, you know, had Ramsdale and Gohe, who very shaky in this game, you know, gave away a ball 15 minutes in. Brian Mbeumo put it in the bottom corner, and Declan Rice is just a saint. I mean, he was just there on the line to save it. Brilliant from him. Needed that to bail out Ramsdale because we would have been down 1-0. and that would have been horrific start. Who knows what would have happened? You know, our fans might have, I don't know what would have happened there. That would have been really, really bad. So glad we got away with that scare. But I thought the way we played, you know, very, very controlled. We were able to keep Brentford to, you know, a small amount of chances. But like you said, Kai Havertz coming in and scoring, Alex, that was massive. I just, it's been building up. I think he's been playing better and better. I wanted him to start in this game. You know, again, he'd played a couple international games, so maybe Arteta knew better than me, but brought him on at the right time, and he was excellent the whole time that he came on, and up until the goal, those like little inverted balls that Saka does into the back post, and Kai's gotten onto a bunch of them this season. He just hasn't scored, right? If he can regularly start scoring that play, oh, it's going to be so dangerous. And you saw it, you know, another
that's
game.
That's the big where, if, Javier. That's the
yeah,
big if.
Yeah, that is the big if. But you know, another game where we saw a beautiful inverted ball like that was the Gordon ball to Lascelles in the Chelsea game, where he cut it back and did like an inverted cross in. Those are extremely dangerous, really hard to defend if you can play those well. And I've seen, like, you know, the best teams be able to play those balls consistently, like whipped into the back post with pace, and someone running in can just come in and basically tap the ball in.
The better comparison, I would say, would be the Leandro Trossard equalizer at Stamford Bridge when Saka got back onto his left foot and played that same exact ball to the back post against Chelsea for Trossard to nip in and score. So you're right, Saka has that in his locker, much more so than, you know, getting to the byline and cutting it back on his right foot. He's a very left-footed player. So, frankly, I mean, Saka's good at getting to the byline, but it's the right-footed aspect of the cross.
If you watch Bukayo Saka, though, he literally is 2v1 the entire game. There is no point in time when Bukayo Saka gets the ball where there aren't two players immediately on him. So it's the same thing with Martinelli as well. It's actually wild to watch how magnetized teams are to our wingers immediately as soon as they get the ball and give them no time on the ball, because that people realize, like, that's the, you know, if you make us play through, you know, our midfield and make them get the chances, it's not as easy for us to score. So it's very frustrating for both of our wingers. But the fact that, you know, still getting output is awesome. And yeah, I thought this was a huge, huge win for us on the road. I was more than delighted, Alex. I couldn't, you know, I celebrated that goal more than I celebrated any other goal for Arsenal this season.
Yeah, I'm trying to not the winner against City, maybe?
No.
No? Okay.
No.
That was late in the game as well, in a very tight game.
I celebrated this one more. I think that it just...
I can understand that with the whole Kai Havertz aspect to it.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. I think it's going to release him, Alex. Release... It just... The penalty
famous
didn't
last
count.
Words.
The penalty
famous
didn't
last
count,
words.
Alex.
Oh, I know that. I know that.
I don't know if it's famous last words, though.
I've had plenty of those moments over Kai's three years with us, Javier. Don't worry. You'll come out the other side of it, though.
But I with Granit Xhaka, it was the same thing. When he first played under Arteta, it took over a year for him to really, you know, become a... I wanted him out, right? We thought he was out the door. He talked about how he was out the door and he was going to leave numerously publicly. But he stayed. And the season he stayed, he became an unbelievable player, right? He's killing it at Leverkusen right now, by the way. So I'm, you know, good for him that he's still, you know, dominating, keeping his level. But I'm hopeful for Kai, because I've seen him kind of turn the corner in his decision making and his speed of play. He's starting to do things better. He's improving. He wasn't for the first like 3 months. He was pretty stale. I wasn't really like impressed with him. You remember me calling for him not to play, benching him, right? I mean, I've been changing my tune for a few weeks now, that I'm seeing the small things that need to be done in his game. I'm seeing them starting to come and starting to see that Kai Havertz that I fell in love with when I was when he was 18, 19 coming through at Leverkusen. I mean, I loved Kai Havertz. He was one of my favorite players, and you and I both used to gush about him. And when he went to Chelsea, I was devastated. Like, I thought he was going to be an unreal player for you guys. So I'm hoping that player is still in there. I'm hoping it's just taking months of, like, training and conditioning and, you know, Arteta's love and nurturing, you know, his passion. You know, Alex, you know the board. You know the board. But I just, yeah, I think it's going to come through for Kai. I don't think this is, like, it'll necessarily, like, ignite him. He's just going to start bashing in goals and being, like, a god or anything. I just think that it's starting to come together for him. He's starting to feel, like, comfortable and at home, and it's showing in his play. And it excites me, like, because I think, you know, it could change the dynamic of the team.
Well, that's 5 minutes on Kai Havertz I didn't want to do, but okay. And now let's lean into 5 minutes of a terrible Chelsea result to make things better. No, not really. One of the 10 a.m. games, probably the biggest of the 10 a.m. games on Saturday, was Newcastle's 4-1 defeat of Chelsea at St. James's Park. It was a very lackluster performance from the Blues. I suffered through it, believing that, you know, it was close enough that we could, you know, maybe nick a draw, something like that. And then we promptly shat ourselves in a 90-second period where you mentioned that that inverted cross from Gordon to Lascelles that put Newcastle ahead 2-1. And then the big Thiago Silva mistake pretty much like 30 seconds after
horrific
the 2-1 goal.
Mistake. Yeah,
that gifted Joe Ellington the easiest goal he will probably ever score and put them up 3-1, and the defeat was sealed with a Reece James frustration second yellow card. Not great from Chelsea. Embarrassingly, the night before, I was back at home at my parents' place. I turned to my brother as I was like listening to like a preview pod about the game to come the next day, and I was saying to my little brother, I'm kind of excited to see what Chelsea do tomorrow. You know, it's going to be a tough game. Like, we'll probably lose, but, you know, I'm excited to see. Yeah, and I was wrong. So,
I tried to warn you, Alex.
Expectations of this young team. I don't think Pochettino managed the player selection side of things amazingly well. You know, we all knew that Chelsea had both Enzo Fernandez and Moises Caicedo coming back from their, you know, international trips spent over in South America playing very difficult games. Enzo was involved with that big Brazil-Argentina game on the Tuesday night and then had a couple days to rest and recover along with a transatlantic trip to
So was Joe Ellington, Alex.
Yes.
So was Bruno Guimarães.
Joe Ellington
was only on
the pitch. Javier, I don't know if you watched, but Joe Ellington was only on the pitch for about 10 minutes before he got sent off in that
Brazil-Argentina
game.
Yeah, okay.
Enzo played about 70, and he looked tired at halftime. And then,
but again, several
started,
of their players played internationals as well.
Enzo started in the Newcastle game on Saturday, and I shit you not, 10 minutes into that game, he looked like devastated. He looked exhausted.
Hey, I've been telling you for a few weeks that I thought his level is like slightly decreased. I think he's been tasked with a little bit too much in midfield. Like the other players go on and do their own thing, and Enzo feels like he's the responsible player. But he's being asked to do too much, and I think it's drained him a little bit. And he's been overplayed. He's been the only player that's been consistently fit.
I thought it would have been the better move to play Caicedo instead of Enzo, and then bring Enzo on for the second half. And, you know, maybe that's just me oversimplifying things, but it was such a stark. You noticed it 10 minutes in. And you knew for a game at Newcastle, at St. James's Park, where Newcastle, I'm not criticizing them at all. They handled the game amazingly with all the injuries they have, suspensions here and there.
Right, I was going to say, they have excuses up the wazoo.
They have all the excuses.
They could bring
well.
Everything they
Didn't
want
matter.
As well, right? Yeah.
But the thing I want to highlight about Newcastle...
They had Miley starting. Lewis Miley.
He was excellent. He was excellent.
Yeah, 18-year-old. Like,
set up the first goal.
English kid.
From a bad offside trap from Cucurella. But yeah, he did really well. But the thing I want to point out, which maybe other people have come to this conclusion already, but I want to get on record as saying it. St. James's Park to me has now reached Anfield status, where you can go there and as an away team, you can play okay and you could still lose 4-1, 5-1, whatever. Remember the big drubbing they had of Aston Villa on the opening day? That's always on the table there. It's become a place where weird shit happens to you. Like Thiago Silva, the most experienced defender in the league, misplacing a pass back to his goalkeeper. We've seen like little mistakes from Thiago Silva before, but that one had me questioning whether he needs to be like continuing starting in the back line for Chelsea, which that's no mean feat. It takes a lot for me to start thinking things like that of Thiago Silva, but St. James's Park, it looks like it got to him. He even had a mistake in the first half where he was being backed into his own corner by, I think, Joe Ellington. And Thiago Silva turned his body to try and kick it off of Joe Ellington or whoever the Newcastle defender was and win like a goal kick from it. And he completely whiffed on the clearance, fell over the ball. The ball went off him and out for a corner. And then Joe Ellington missed a sitter from the resulting corner.
Oh, like, I do remember that. I was watching.
That was already a big mistake that like probably should have led to a goal. And then it happened. An even worse mistake happens later on that basically, you know, seals the game for Newcastle.
He just really wanted his pal Joe Ellington to get a goal, Alex.
I guess so.
Also, Reece James like kicking away the ball and then doing that second stupid yellow of pulling the player back after he did like a flick from a back pass from the goalie, and then he tries to flick it back and like
but that's
does
what
a stupid
I mean by
yellow. Saint like
James's
what was
Park
that?
Is at Anfield level.
Yeah,
like you go
wild.
There and just you make dumb mistakes that you wouldn't usually make, or you see players make these mistakes where you think, where has that come from? Like I haven't seen you do that in like ever. And all of a sudden you're passing the ball directly to a Newcastle player to just, you know, ghost in on goal and score. It was bizarre, but you know, like I said, it's a young Chelsea team. I need to adjust my own expectations for what I
also you're right,
should expect
Alex,
in games like
I
this.
We were talking about, you know, the Newcastle's home record. They're just a different animal at home. You know, Newcastle at home is, like you said, it's like Anfield. They have an insane home advantage. They always did, even when they were a shit team.
Right. I said that
they
in
always
the
had a good home advantage.
We did badly there when we were good and they were bad.
Right. But but even now, it's just magnified that they have a good team. So,
but I don't want to just brush aside the Thiago Silva point. I don't say that lightly. That
he's 39,
should consider
Alex.
Moving
you
on.
You should be saying it.
I'm saying it.
It's a crutch
because
I've been saying it to you
another,
for a long time.
There's another side to it. We've started to get, you know, more and more players back from injury. Badiashile made his first start of the season in that game. We have Levi Colwill, Axel Disasi's played mostly well since he's come in.
You should be integrating those younger players, giving them more minutes. It doesn't like you're not going to win anything this season. This is
we need to
if
start
you were,
preparing
if you were
for
in
life
contention
after Thiago
for like,
Silva.
Right. If you were in contention for top four and you were playing well and doing like winning a bunch of big games, and which you're not doing. You lost to Brentford 2-0 a couple of weeks ago, and then you just lost 4-1, and you drew a couple of games in between. So you're winless in four.
We beat Tottenham.
Oh, right. You beat Tottenham. I forgot about that one. That was a good win. But,
yeah,
again,
unbeaten against Arsenal, Tottenham, and Man City, I had reason to think, you know, we could go up and at least put up a fight at Newcastle. But I think
But I'm saying you shouldn't have top four
got to
aspirations
our
heads. Or
I
know, even top six. So I think that you're not going to get those places this season. There's a lot of teams that are better than you and have better results. And are just going to consistently be better than this Chelsea team. I think maybe at the end of the season, you might be able to string together some good results. But I think you have to develop players, like you said, like Disasi. You know, you've already developed your midfield and you're developing your attack. I think Thiago Silva is the one crutch where you just have to figure out a way of not playing with him for a while. You might lose some games. There might be some mistakes.
We're losing some games.
You'll come
with
around.
Him, so,
yeah, exactly. You'll come around. It'll come around. So you have the players. I think Thiago Silva's got to take a bench and just play a. He can come on and be that, like, you know, really good defensive sure up guy off the bench. But I think that's the role he should be playing at Chelsea now.
I'm not going to be as harsh. I'm going to make the statement that Thiago Silva should never be playing in a center back pairing where there's only two center backs in a back four, which we kind of knew already before this season. If you're playing Thiago Silva, it has to be a back three with either Colwill and Badiashile on the left side and Dizazi on the right side of that back three. You need those players to cover for his, you know, lack of pace and keep him from getting isolated in certain situations. So, yeah, we'll close up on the Chelsea talk there, because there was an even bigger result on Sunday morning when Tottenham hosted Aston Villa. Went ahead 22 minutes into the game when James Maddison's replacement, Giovanni Lo Celso, scored a deflected goal. Tottenham had a few more goals ruled out by VAR, but Villa kept plugging away. They got their equalizer right before halftime, and then that man, Ollie Watkins, their go-to man, scored the winner with about 30 minutes left. I got up and watched this game, and it felt like I started getting like PTSD from the Chelsea-Tottenham game a few weeks ago, with all like the offside goals, like the swings, the pauses for VAR. There weren't the red cards in this game that happened in the Chelsea-Tottenham game, but it was still, it felt like an adrenaline rush every like 5 to 10 minutes. It felt like something crazy was happening every 5 to 10 minutes. And I came out of this thinking much more highly of Aston Villa, because, you know, but I came in criticizing Tottenham's high line and how Villa were going to take advantage of that. But Villa themselves played this crazy high line that led to Tottenham having all these chances. And the gamble worked out. The Tottenham only scored one, but they could have had many, many more goals, and it could have been an absolute rout for Tottenham.
Son scored a hat-trick of offside goals. He had five, I want to say, other shots on target. And then he also missed a couple of sitters. I know that Kulusevski hit the post. Poro had a couple of chances. I mean, it was like Odogi got in 1v1. I mean, there were so many like ridiculous, ridiculous chances that Spurs had and they just missed. So I don't know if it necessarily worked. I think Tottenham did the thing where they miss a bunch of chances. They're fun to watch. I mean,
it worked. Villa won 2-1.
They've got good sequences of play. Like, you know, a lot of one touch passing and back heels and flicks, and it's Postecoglou has this Tottenham team playing, you know, really, really well. But Villa, like you said, they overcame the storm and they slowly worked their way into the game. And then in the second half, I thought Villa were really good, thought they were able to, you know, match Tottenham. There were still chances, but it wasn't nearly as wild as the first half was. And yeah, like you said, I think this was Villa's probably most impressive performance of the season in terms of, you know, how they were able to weather the storm. Now, for Tottenham, they started with a back four, Alex, of four fullbacks. This was Emerson Royale and Davies as the center backs. Davies is not a center back, by the way. He's been a fullback his entire career. Just this season, he started randomly playing center back.
He's more of a center back than Emerson Royale is. He's more of a center back. Yes, like he's played there for Wales in a back three.
And Poro. So it was a four wing backs, which I've never seen before. Just like a FIFA lineup from Postecoglou. And bizarre. They had a lot of injuries in this game, so some excuses for Tottenham. You know, they didn't have their two starting center backs. They didn't. Betancourt played in this game, but he had to go off hurt as well. There was a really bad challenge from Matty Cash. Matty Cash made on Betancourt, and Betancourt had to come off injured. He was like limping, and it looked pretty bad. So hopefully he's okay. But that was a huge blow for Tottenham, because he had just come back and he looked really, really good in that midfield and was basically bossing the game. And I thought as soon as he came off, it was like, I want to say the 35th or the 40th minute when he came off, it like really took the wind out of Tottenham's sails. And then to add, you know, compound the misery of the injury, Tottenham get Villa get a goal out of nowhere off of, you know, a set piece ball 50 yards out that Douglas Luiz just puts on a plate. So
right before halftime.
Yeah, like right before halftime.
Seventh minute of injury time in the
exactly.
first half.
Exactly. So, I mean, just a gutter punch blow. So a lot of bad things had to happen to Tottenham in this game, even with all the injuries. I actually don't take too badly for Tottenham in this game, you know, because I thought they still played well, created a lot of chances. They could have won this game 3-4, you know, probably 3-4-2. I think they still would have conceded a couple of goals, but I think they did enough to score a lot. They just didn't take their chances. And for the players that they were missing, I think it was kind of a, you know, brilliant gamble by Postecoglou, and it didn't work, but it almost did. And again, like what he did with Chelsea, he's doing crazy things, and they're not necessarily working, but you're seeing the methods of the madness, and you're seeing, and it's refreshing. It's cool to see. I hate to say it with that it's Tottenham, but it's cool to see that there's just different strategies that can be brought to professional football in the Premier League, and they can somewhat be successful. They can, you know, his players aren't necessarily producing it as to the highest level, because they had someone like Harry Kane in there, he'd have 20 goals this season.
I mean, 20 is underselling it. he had 30 for them basically last year, almost 30, I guess. Here's the thing.
I'm saying he'd have 20 right now, Alex.
20 right now. Oh, okay. Now, oh, yeah, I get it now. Here's the thing. Those gambles become less and less amusing as these losses stack up. They before this run of three games where everything went to shit against Chelsea, they were unbeaten in the league, top of the league. I think they'd drawn the one game or something like that, the first game against Brentford. Their next game up after this is Manchester City away. And we can quickly hit on that now, but they're still going to be without Romero. That's going to be the final game of his three-game suspension from the Chelsea red card. Van de Ven's
we got to mention the bogus talk, Alex, because the bogey team talk. I'm sorry, because Tottenham is always the bogey team for City.
Tottenham's
right?
The bogey team for City, but that has historically been in an era when Tottenham have focused more so and been better prepared in defensive counterattacking systems.
Bet the over.
I'm playing, absolutely bet the over. But I'm applying the same logic to, you know, Tottenham now. Going to the Etihad next Sunday. I think that's at 11:30 a.m. This upcoming Sunday. I'm applying the same thought process that I did with the Villa game, where if Villa are able to... I'm captaining Haaland, is what I'm saying. Haaland is going to be allowed to run free and behind countless times in that next game. I see a big win for Manchester City. Yes, maybe Tottenham, with the amount of chances they've created themselves, can somewhat keep up. But if I had to predict a scoreline, I'd say the same thing that I did for the last City game against Liverpool, and I'd say 4-2, maybe 4-1
or
something like
that. That's a lot more reasonable, Alex, because I think something like that might happen as well. I think Tottenham will go to play their own game. They've showed that no matter what their personnel, where they are, who they're playing against, they are going to play their game. And I think it's going to be fun to watch. I think they're going to create a lot of chances against City. I think City has shown that they can be had defensively. The Chelsea game exposed them for, you know, being able to create loads of chances. I think the way that Chelsea were able to do that, I think Tottenham could do something similar. And I see this being, I'm going to say 3-2 City.
I just don't think Tottenham have the players in midfield to replicate what Chelsea did to them. To Manchester City specifically.
Yeah, like, and the Betancourt injury, and then I think they'll have Sarr back from suspension.
I mean, even with Sarr, Højbjerg, Bissouma, those three players, they're not the same level as Caicedo, Enzo, and Gallagher. And take this with a grain of salt, but pinch of salt. I mean, we didn't perform amazingly in the Newcastle game, but in the City game before the international break, that was one of the performances of the season, and we made City play our game. I don't think Tottenham have the personnel with these injuries and suspensions for such a big game away from home to have that kind of performance as well and keep up with City. Maybe for a period, they'll have a period where they'll look good and create chances, but overall, City, I think, will put 3 or 4 past them.
I mean, I think we're going to look back at this Chelsea midfield in a couple of years and be like, oh, you know, at the time, this was... They're going to be one of the best midfields in the league within a year or two. I mean, you spent
200 million on two players.
250 million better be. Two players. Yeah, it better be the best midfield in the league in a couple of years here. So
that doesn't discount what I'm saying. I think you're already one of the better midfield.
Yeah, you don't. But I'm saying Tottenham have the personnel, like attacking wise, Brennan Johnson, Kulishevsky, Son, you know, to create enough havoc against the City team that I see some goals coming for Tottenham. So I'm going to say 3-2 Tottenham. Or 3-2 3-2 City. But Tottenham make a game of it.
All right, before we get to Javier's Fantasy Kitchen, I do have to mention, maybe not the entire game, but just the one.
Turn the lights back on.
Alejandro Garnacho scored, I think it's, I can confidently say it's the front runner for goal of the season in Manchester United's 3-0 win at Everton.
That was an unreal goal.
Yeah, you never know. You've seen some crazy goals. There's a lot of the season left, but it's definitely the front runner.
Oh, it was so beautiful the way it went into.
It was a carbon copy of Wayne Rooney's winner against Manchester City. I think it was better as well. It was from further out. It was from a more acute angle. But the fact that Rooney scored the same goal in a Manchester derby in a year, I think it was 2013, the last Sir Alex Ferguson title. It was at home against Manchester City when those two teams were vying for that title, when City had won it the previous year and United beat them at Old Trafford to solidify and get back on top for the following season. That you know, I think we'll remember the Wayne Rooney goal more so for the conditions that it was scored in. But Garnacho's goal, just like in a vacuum, was insane. Like to make a bad cross, an objectively a bad cross from Diogo Dalot that was behind him, was going probably out for a throw in on the other side of the field, to turn that into a top bins like bicycle kick. I didn't know Garnacho had that in him. I knew he was a talented player, but
now he's on
that
everybody's
was
radar. Yeah, and then that's how you make everyone want to know who you are.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was insane. That was insane from Garnacho. Exciting for him. Also, you see, Rashford got the pity penalty from Bruno. Try to get him off his bad form. Yeah, just hilarious that you got teamwork, guys. That's what we did with Havertz as well. Hey, maybe it'll work with Hound. But I do want to mention one more game, Alex, before the kitchen. Luton, they got their first win of the season, Alex.
It was not their first win of the season.
First home win, I'm sorry. First home win of the season. I thought another fairly good performance from them, and they're on a decent run of form now. I think they've, not going to say they've turned it around, but hey, they've done okay these last few games. Even against the big teams, they haven't been losing. They've now turned their home stadium to not a fortress, but it's not easy to go there anymore. You know, even the top teams are only getting one or two goals, and even when they're going away from home, they're keeping the games close. They're not getting blown out. Yeah. So
they're no longer a sure 3 points. Like first month of the season, month or two of the season, I was looking at Luton for most teams and thinking, oh, I should bring in one of their forwards in fantasy to score against them, and that's going to be an easy 3 points for any of their opposition. But no, they've upped their game, and I think the Everton points deduction, we talked about the effect that could have on Everton in galvanizing them, and if one game into that deduction, we look like we're wrong. Similarly, there might be a bit of a galvanizing of the other.
Yeah, I didn't think about
that.
But absolutely, the other teams thinking, now like maybe it's my chance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, Javier, step into the kitchen.
Lights back on. I'm chefing it back up. I've got some good picks. I had a very good week in fantasy again. I'm back among the. I think around the European places, a little bit out of them. I think I'm around eighth. I know Alex is in first, but it's a long season, Alex. Like you said, being first right now, you need to take it with a grain of salt. It doesn't really matter. I'll be there soon, Alex. I'll be next to you soon. But a few good picks here. Alex suggested one, and it's one that Alex, a player, likes that was linked with Chelsea, Mikel Olise. I think Alex said he's 5.8 mil. He scored a beautiful goal, came back from injury. Last season, he was pretty much the centerpiece of Crystal Palace's attack. So he's a player they've missed a lot, and they've needed, they need him to score goals, and they need them now. And, Palace have an okay run of fixtures. I think their next couple of fixtures are kind. But if Olise does produce in these next couple of games, he might even be a decent hold for the big games. I think he plays Liverpool, and then is it Arsenal after that?
He's got West Ham away next, and then Bournemouth at home. And then after that, they have, I believe, Manchester City, Liverpool, Brighton, and Arsenal, which, is objectively very tough, but we've seen Olise have big performances and big goals against teams before.
I do think it's a problem, Alex, because Olise is 5.8 mil, and you've got a lot of other really good midfielders at that, price point.
We've
got Gordon, we got Palmer.
You need someone different if you're trying to come back in
But
your
I
league.
Do have another differential for you guys, and I like this pick a little bit more than Alex's pick. Anthony Elanga, 5 mil, only owned by 1% of teams. Now, you think, why Elanga now? because Elanga wasn't playing 90 minutes early in the season. He was coming off the bench. He was, you know, being pulled off early. The last four games for Nottingham Forest, he's played 90 minutes. He's got goals in his last two games, which is the most returns he's had all season. And they've got a really good run here. They've got Everton at home, Fulham away, Wolves away, Spurs at home, Bournemouth at home, and then, you know, Newcastle away, United at home, Brentford away. It's a good run of fixtures. These next, you know, seven or eight where he could pick up a lot of points, and they're good at home. So if Elanga plays, he'll definitely, you know, get some returns at home. And last but not least, it's the time to bring him in if you want him. If you've been looking for a Newcastle attacking asset that you haven't, don't really know who to pick up, or you maybe already have Anthony Gordon like myself, Alexander Isak. Callum Wilson's out for a few months. Newcastle score boatloads of goals, especially at home. And, you know, it seems like they're a team that no matter what, they're going to be looking to get goals. And I think Isak's on penalties. So 7.4 mil. I think if there's a time to bring him in, you know, he scored a goal against Chelsea. Newcastle have a kind run of fixtures as well. They do play Manchester United at home next. They're not on great form. Then they have Everton away, bottom relegation team, Spurs away, Fulham at home, Luton away, Nottingham Forest at home. So that's a really, really good run of their next four fixtures. So I think if you want to get some points in, you know, maximize on some of your Newcastle players. That's what I got this week, Alex.
All right. Yeah, I like that that Elanga pick specifically. He's been very good. Kind of under the radar good. All right, Javier, that's enough for this week. Congrats on being top in November again. I know it's a big deal to Arsenal fans. If you want to follow Javier on Twitter, you can follow him at JavierRev9. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ASMoss92. And you can follow the podcast socials at GhostGoalPod. Enjoy the return of Champions League fixtures this week. And of course, the Premier League games next weekend. And until next time, see you.